Good evening, everyone. My name is Deidre Stats, and no, you're not hearing things. It's not Corinne tonight. She is away, and she asked me to cover, so I'm very happy to be with you all and going over tonight's reading. I had a little look at some of it, and I'm excited because it's powerful stuff tonight, as it always is with the Course. So first of all, I'm going to start by giving everyone the page references for your awareness. So if you're reading along with the recording, you know exactly where we are. So in the Circle of Atonement edition, it's page 808, paragraph 5. And I'm going to start with the sentence just before this. So it's going to be... A broken body does not, a broken body shows the mind has not healed. So that's where we're going to start in the sparkle that corresponds to page 625, and it's the second line from the bottom of the page. In the original edition, it's chapter 27, part 3, paragraph 18. And it's the second to last sentence. And in the Foundation for Inner Peace version of the Course, it's chapter 27, paragraph 5, sentence 3. So I know when Corinne is back next week, she'll have lots of wonderful things to share with you all. So I'll be looking forward to that. And as we normally do, just dropping into silence and stillness for a moment. Taking in a deep breath. And just allowing the Holy Spirit to be with us. Letting go of anything from the day that doesn't need to be here right now. Any stress, any upsets, anything that is not of our true nature, just letting it go with the breath. And in this moment, in our time together, as we come together to study the truth and strengthen the knowledge of truth in our minds, that we are all one, that in truth there is no separation. There is only love. Only love is real. We ask that the Holy Spirit be in charge now tonight at our request. That if we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the things that the Holy Spirit offers. So with light in our hearts and love in our minds, we allow the Holy Spirit to be fully in charge tonight. We lay everything on the altar of the Holy Spirit, and we're open to hear. We are open to see the truth. Thank you, and so it is. Okay, here we go. So as we normally do, I'm going to read a little bit and then we will pause for reflection, comments, questions, or even just things that, you know, stand out for you. And we love that these calls are conversational and they bring in those real life experiences because we're all in this together and we learn and grow from one another. So the sharing is wonderful. So here we go. A broken body shows the mind has not been healed. A miracle of healing proves that separation is without effect. What you would prove to him, you will believe. The power of witness comes from your belief. and everything you say or do or think but testifies to what you teach to him. Your body can be means to teach that it has never suffered pain because of him. And in its healing, can it offer him mute testimony of his innocence? It is this testimony which can speak with power greater than 1,000 tongues. For here is his forgiveness proved to him. A miracle can not offer nothing less to him than it has given unto you. So does your healing show your mind is healed and has forgiven what he did not do. And so is he convinced his innocence was never lost and healed along with you. Thus does the miracle undo all things the world attests can never be undone. And hopelessness and death must disappear before the ancient clarion call of life. This call has power far beyond the weak and miserable cry of death and guilt. The ancient calling of the Father to his Son and of the Son unto his own will yet be the last trumpet that would the world will ever hear. Brother, there is no death, and this you learn when you but wish to show your brother that you had no hurt of him. He thinks your blood is on his hands, and so he stands condemned. Yet it is given you to show him by your healing that he has guilt, that his guilt is but the fabric of a senseless dream. And I'll pause there for now. So powerful stuff just in these open paragraphs already. And it's speaking so much to the power of forgiveness. And Corinne was talking about this a few weeks ago about the course's definition of forgiveness and how it differs from the world's, that the course's forgiveness is total. It says in the course basically that to forgive is to acknowledge that what you think has occurred hasn't happened at all. And so that seems, you know, a pretty drastic way of looking at forgiveness from the world's perspective. But what I'm struck by the most in these paragraphs is the importance and the emphasis that is being placed on we don't do this alone. We practice forgiveness with each other. We need the Holy Spirit and we need our brothers to show, to demonstrate true healing. It says, your body can be a means to teach that he has never suffered pain. So we have the power when we repurpose the body from the eyes of the Holy Spirit to teach our brother and ourselves of our innocence. And that just gives me chills. Like I literally have chills when I read that sentence. So I'm going to pause and ask if anyone on the call wants to share anything or question anything in the paragraphs or have a real life example of this. I'm just going to pause for a moment. Sounds like we're good. Okay. Was also really struck by this sentence, so I'm going to read it again. It says, "He thinks your blood is on his hands, and so he stands condemned. Yet it is given you to show him by your healing that his guilt is but the fabric of a senseless dream." There it is right there. We need each other and we see our innocence through one another, and it speaks to our oneness that we are all interconnected. There is no separation at all. How just are miracles? For they bestow an equal gift of full deliverance from guilt upon your brother and yourself. Your healing saves him pain as well as you, and you are healed because you wished him well. This is the law of the miracle. This is the law the miracle obeys. The healing sees no specialness at all. It does not come from pity, but from love. And love would prove all suffering is but vain imagining, a foolish wish with no effects. Your health is a result of your desire to see your brother walk with no blood upon his hand, no guilt upon his heart, made heavy with the proof of sin. And what you wish is given you to see. The cost of your serenity is his. This is the price the Holy Spirit and the world interprets differently. The world perceives it as a statement of the fact that your salvation sacrifices his. The Holy Spirit knows your healing is the witness unto his and cannot be apart from his at all. As long as he consents to suffer, you will be unhealed. Yet you can show him that his suffering is purposeless and wholly without cause. Show him your healing and he will consent. Hang on. Show him your healing and he will consent no more to suffer, for his innocence has been established in your sight and his, and laughter will replace your sighs, because God's sons have remembered that he is God's son. Who then fears healing? Only those to whom their brother's sacrifice and pain are seen to represent them, are their own serenity. Their helplessness and weakness represents the grounds on which they justify his pain. The constant sting of guilt he suffers serves to prove that he is slave, but they are free. The constant pain they suffer demonstrates that they are free because they hold him bound, and sickness is desired to prevent a shift of balance in the sacrifice. How could the Holy Spirit be deterred an instant, even less to reason with an argument for sickness such as this, and need your healing be delayed because you pause to listen to insanity? And I'll pause there.
Wow, that last paragraph. Could you read that again? Who then fears healing? Because I just did not get that.
Okay, so who then fears healing? Only those whom their brother's sacrifice and pain are seen to represent their own serenity. Their helplessness and weakness represents the grounds on which they justify his pain. The constant sting of guilt he suffers serves to prove that he is a slave, but they are free. The constant pain they suffer demonstrates that they are free because they hold him bound. Again, this is the world's view of forgiveness. And sickness is desired to prevent a shift of balance in the sacrifice. How could the Holy Spirit be deterred an instant, even less to reason with an argument for sickness such as this, and need your healing be delayed because you pause to listen to insanity? It cocks me up when the course is funny.
Yeah, because we do that. Or I'll speak for myself. I do that at times. And Corinne was talking last week about not doing that anymore. Like, why would you do that? Do you want to be miserable?
Yeah.
And I keep going back to that when I get in one of those moods where I choose to be defensive or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like, why? You know, why do that?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny when the course calls it insanity, because it totally is, but we do it. When we place conditions upon, you know, if we're thinking my innocence is preserved by my brother being guilty and suffering pain, that is not forgiveness. That is the world. Like, if we say, oh, I'll forgive you, but I actually believe you're a jerk,
yeah,
for doing what you did, that's not forgiveness. That's keeping your brother bound, which is what this is talking about here.
Exactly.
And suffering pain to make you, to like keep your belief in your own innocence strong. So in that, when it's talking about the balance, let me read that again. Okay, it says, the constant pain they suffer demonstrates that they are free because they hold him bound. So we hold our brothers bound. And sickness is desired to prevent a shift of balance. So I will stay innocent as long as my brother is guilty of something, like some imagined sin and some belief in sacrifice.
Yeah.
How could the Holy Spirit be deterred an instant, even less to reason with an argument for sickness such as this, and need your healing be delayed because you pause to listen to insanity?
And you know, that's that last because you pause to listen to insanity, and every time we make that decision to, you know, confirm our brother is guilty of something, that's an ego decision. That is based on our thinking with the ego, you know. Otherwise, we wouldn't do that at all. So the ego is always that voice in the back of the head, you know, that's saying, yeah, that person is guilty.
Yeah.
That's such a mistake.
Yeah, it really is, Paula. You nailed it. You hit the nail on the head. And that's why, you know, we're asked when we practice this work to take all of our grievances and place them in the Holy Spirit's hands, because, you know, even a thought as small as, God, I'm irritated because my mom didn't empty the dishwasher, for example, and I'm condemning my mom for, like, not emptying the dishwasher. And it's like, it's so insidious, those little thoughts where we're crucifying our brother. It's like, wait a minute here, you know.
And, you know, you could be in the best mood, too, and something like that will happen. And it's that choice, am I going to descend down that staircase with this thought? am I going to keep this up, you know? We don't.
Hi, it's Christy. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Paula.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, it's so true. It is such a mistake, but it's so, when you're in it, or when I'm in it, I speak for my own myself, but I think people can relate. It's like sometimes the areas where we get really hooked, where I guess our old wounds are, and the ego tends to take charge really easily. It's so scary how quickly that can take you down the rabbit hole, really quickly. And
yeah,
I think I mentioned it on a call maybe last week or so, but how something I did, I got angry, and I'm having a hard time. Like, I was believing something, not knowing it was true, but it was, like, completely fabricated by my head, by my ego. And as a result, this person is no longer speaking to me. It was a guy I was dating, and it's, like, heartbreaking. And I'm trying not to beat myself up and give it over and, you know, trying to be loving to myself, but it's very hard when you see how the ego does that. And it's like, there's even the one other layer where the ego comes in again and then wants to judge for having done that.
I hear you. And that's part of how the belief in the ego is, you know, kind of dangling its best evidence to show you, look at that right there. You did something bad. You're guilty. You did it. And the truth is, you're innocent no matter what. You're innocent whether the gentleman talks to you again, and you're innocent if he doesn't. It's not conditional on what the picture looks like here.
Yeah. It's very hard to not get attached to the form.
I hear you.
And in turn, he is innocent also. The ego just does not want it. It's that background noise, that persistent background noise.
It really is.
You know. And sometimes I just kind of ride with it. Working with this material, you really do know on some level that, you know, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I don't need to do it. And the beauty really is handing it over to the Holy Spirit to be undone for you, because we can't undo it. We can't do it.
And yeah, you can't make yourself stop doing that. Yeah.
You gotta ask for help. I wonder if even looking at it slightly differently, like the whole situation, right? What if you like kind of reframed it and you were kind of like, you know, bless him for not speaking to me, because in that I'm getting an opportunity to look at what I'm looking at a belief in guilt because he's not speaking to me. If he were speaking to me, I wouldn't be looking at this belief right now. So him doing exactly what he did he's innocent, just like Paula said, but in him responding to you the way that he has, you have an opportunity to look at something.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, like, it doesn't take away the sting of what the picture looks like, and that's okay. We're encouraged to not feel guilty about learning. We're learning as we hand
yeah.
these things over. And so...
There's something,
yeah.
It's like a background noise.
Oh, I'm sorry. It might be the wind. Yeah, I stepped outside. I'm at work.
Oh, okay.
Hope that's a little
better.
There
we go.
Paula, you said something, you know, see his innocence too. And that part I've mastered. I've been saying, you know, like, may I see his innocence, but now I'm condemning myself, you know, it's like, but yeah, you're right. Also, Deidre, in that, yeah, it's an opportunity to look at guilt. And I'm very aware of this pattern coming up in relationships. So it's like, okay, well, here it is again. And I did it again.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. When it feels like such a big price, like the loss of something, it's like, how can I stop that? And you really have to ask for help with that.
Yes. Yeah, because we really can't stop it. And you know, it really there's a certain freedom that comes. How that relationship that you're talking about, was that consistently a good relationship to be in?
Well, that's a good question. It was long distance, which made it difficult. 7 hours apart, although he's from my home, but his hometown is where I live now. But so that there were lots of difficulties, and I guess that's irrelevant. Consistently good. It was getting better. I could see as I was practicing the course and releasing expectations and just, you know, like, I am my own salvation. I was always saying that, like, all of that stuff, like not looking to him or putting pressure. The more he opened up, and it started to be really good. But no, if I say consistently, no, it was challenging. And also it was all text message based. But I have to look at my part in that. I didn't speak up and say, hey, there's all these things. There's so many layers here where I can look at my part in it. But I am putting a lot of the blame on myself. So,
yeah. Well, that's what the ego wants us to do. That background noise that just keeps hammering. I always try to go back to this thing. I went to a rebirthing session once years ago, and the person who did the rebirthing gave me this phrase: I am free to be me, and I allow others the freedom to be who they are. It is safe for all of us to grow up. And that kind of helps me to rebalance in a situation like you're in right now, and I'm actually in the same kind of situation with someone myself, and it just helps to, yes, we are free to be exactly who we are. We're not guilty of anything, and we don't need that. There's a neediness there.
Yeah.
That neediness is what I need to heal. But this is a lifetime thing with me. This feeling like I need someone or anyone in my life to be complete or whole. And it's really not the truth.
Right. Yeah. I have the same predicament.
I think everybody does, actually.
I think everybody does, yeah. And
I don't think there's a person listening to this call or on this call who hasn't, you know, experienced what it's like to, you know, really beat themselves up over something. I know I relate. One of the first places that the ego road will take me down is, like, totally beating myself up. And so I hear you. I hear you there.
Yeah. Thank you both.
There's a footnote here in the Circle of Atonement. There's a footnote that relates to these paragraphs that we've been reading, and I'll read it. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is a log in your own eye? He's saying, you hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. In the Course's illusion, the log to be removed from your own eye is the speck of sin that you see in your brother's eye.
Yeah.
Does that relate to what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very powerful because we need to, we're joined, we're not separate beings. So as long as we're pointing the finger and condemning our brother or ourselves in any way, there, forgiveness hasn't occurred, healing hasn't occurred. So we need to be, you know, vigilant for being willing to look at those specks or logs, as the case may be. I think that example is awesome, Paula. And just being willing to show them to the Holy Spirit, like, look, here it is.
And it always goes back to page 90. I must have decided wrongly because I'm not at peace. And, you know, it says the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I will let him. You know, and then I choose to let him by allowing him to decide for God for me. So it's always trusting in the Holy Spirit. And so often these situations, when we trust in the Holy Spirit to undo it, they come around and things turn out, you know, really for the good.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a lot of trust and faith
in
Holy Spirit's ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. It really does. You're spot on, Paula. And that page 90 is so awesome. I must have decided wrongly, for I am not at peace. And that whole part about he will take away all my wrongdoings if I will let him. That is the key, because often we want to hold on to it, right?
Oh, beat the drum of it? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing, when we do that, we're not thinking with God. And if we're not thinking with God, we're not thinking at all. So it's mind wandering is what it is. You know, it keeps us in the illusion of this body. And the ego is so terribly threatened when we really do trust in the Holy Spirit, you know, that it becomes suspicious and quite vicious at best. So I just think that the beauty of it all is really at any moment, We can turn it over.
Yep.
You know, we can beat the drum of it. We can go through the misery. But at any moment, it can be undone for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that lesson in the Course in situations like Christy was talking about, I don't know what anything is for. I don't know. But the Holy Spirit knows.
That's the best. Where is that, Deidre? We should read that right now, really, because that is so powerful.
I can look it up. Hold on.
Yeah, it's in the front of the book. Where's my other book?
It's lesson 25.
Okay.
Lesson 25.
So it's actually a workbook lesson.
Yeah. Yeah, lesson 25.
I'm just looking for it. Oh, yeah, I do not know what anything is for. Okay. But there is also... Where is it? Well, I can't find it. There's a paragraph in the beginning of the text that really talks about this. Okay.
Purpose is meaning. Today's idea explains why nothing you see means anything. You do not know what it is for, therefore it is meaningless to you. Everything is for your best interest. That is what it's for. This is its purpose. That is what it means. It is recognizing this, that your goals become unified. It is in recognizing this that what you see is given meaning. You perceive the world and everything in it meaningful in terms of ego goals. These goals have nothing to do with your own best interest, but the interest of the ego is not in you. The false identification makes you incapable of understanding what anything is for. As a result, you are bound to misuse it. When you believe this, you will try to withdraw the goals you have assigned to the world instead of attempting to reinforce them. So I think that's pretty powerful, Christy, in terms of your situation and perhaps even letting yourself off the hook. We don't always know
yes.
why people enter and leave our experience on the level of form, right? We don't know. But if
yeah.
that person was meant to, you know, if that person is meant to stay, he will come back on the level of form. If he's not, he will stay gone, and there will be a purpose to it. We don't always
right,
know.
Right, there's no... I have no control over that. Exactly.
Exactly. Nor should you.
Yeah, it kind of takes, that kind of makes it a little bit easier. I want to control it. Yeah, but
yeah.
to not be in control of it is kind of a relief.
Absolutely. I don't know about anybody else, but when I feel like I'm in trouble is when I'm being a control freak. Because
yeah.
we want the control, and that gets me in trouble if I am trying to control things. And so the course is a wonderful roadmap of letting go of control and going like, hey, I don't perceive my best interest, but I know the Holy Spirit does.
Yeah.
And when you're in that flow of just following the guidance that the Holy Spirit gives you, and it's just like effortless and everything feels easy, you know, there's such
yep.
a to everything, and there's you don't have to try, it just happens, you know, that
yep.
so gorgeous. So gorgeous.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Yeah. So you're exactly where you need to be.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
That's what I was trying to. That boy, you really nailed it just now. It is.
You did,
this is all about control, because that's that line. I am free to be me, and I allow others the freedom to be who they are. That's about giving up control. That's about just letting everybody be free. And there's a. This whole control thing is very subtle, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, half the time we don't even know we're doing it.
Exactly.
Well, and when we are trying to control something, we are trying to preserve and cherish our hold on this separate identity.
Yeah.
Of who we think we are. It's not who we are in truth, but it's who we think we are. And so that in itself is not going to lead anywhere, you know, fulfilling. If we just let go and allow the Holy Spirit to work through us, which every one of us has the capacity to do because we are from Holy Spirit. That's who we are. We are that spirit inside, beyond everything. That's who we are. That's the true core of our nature.
Absolutely.
So, that part of ourselves that knows who we are, and that part of ourselves be in charge. And that's when we feel, you know, joy and ease and peace and all of those things.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
Boy, this... Go ahead.
I was going to say, how about we read a little more?
Yes.
Consider how this self-perception must extend and do not overlook the fact every thought extends because that is its purpose, being what it really is. From an idea of self, of two, three, comes a necessary view of function split between the two. And what you would consider is only half the error, which you think is all of it. Your brother's sins become the central target for correction, lest your errors and his own be seen as one. Yours are mistakes, but his are sins, and not the same as yours. His merit punishment, while yours is fairness, should be overlooked. In the interpretation of correction, your own mistakes you will not even see. The focus of correction has been placed outside of yourself and on who cannot be a part of you while the perception lasts. What is condemned can never be returned to its accuser who hated it and hates it still. This is your brother's focus of your hate, unworthy to be part of you, and thus outside of yourself, the other half, which is denied, and only what is left without his presence is perceived as all of you. To this remaining half, the Holy Spirit must represent the other half until you recognize it is the other half. And this he does by giving both of you a function that is one, not different. Correction is the function given both, but neither one alone. And when it is fulfilled as shared, it must correct mistakes in both of you. It cannot leave mistakes in one unhealed and set the other free. This is a divided purpose which cannot be shared, and so it cannot be the function which the Holy Spirit sees as his, and you can rest assured that he will not fulfill a function he cannot understand and recognize as his, for only thus can he keep yours perceived intact despite your separate views of what your function is. If he upheld divided function, you were lost indeed. His inability to see his goal divided and distinct for each of you preserves yourself from being made aware of any function other than its own, and that thus is healing given both of you. I'll pause there. So, isn't that beautiful? Like, it's just speaking to me that we need to accept the atonement, the belief that we are one, we are interconnected. What is healed in one is also healed in our brother, our sonship, or it is not healed at all. Healing is total or not at all. And we know that healing has and will happen because it is God's will. It says correction is the function given both, neither one alone, and it is filled as it is shared. And these are all like in both is in all capital letters, shared is in all caps, and it must correct mistakes in both of you. Must is in all capital letters. So the course never, it doesn't play around. Something is forgiven for all, or you will not be free. And I'm sure, like on the call here, we can relate to situations where, you know, the world's view of forgiveness applies, where we're like, oh, you're really a jerk, but I'll forgive you. How that ickiness, that residue of ickiness, that feeling of, like, underneath that is still, like, attack thoughts and anger. Like, you're a jerk, but I'll forgive you anyway. But you're actually still carrying the wound. When you say, I'll forgive you, but you don't actually mean it, you're just saying, oh, but you're a jerk.
Yeah.
You're actually still hanging on to the attack and the anger. So there's no forgiveness there. I feel like, Paula, did you want to say something?
Why do we do that?
We wanted to have an experience of separation. We believed in the idea, the crazy mad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can see the innocence in that, actually, because the Course, there's several passages in the Course where it talks about, you know, us being children creating monsters, and we don't have any idea of, like, that they're really just shadows and they can't do anything to hurt us. But we believed in these ideas so much that those ideas became our reality. But we're just innocent children who don't know what we're doing, and we've believed in these illusions so much that,
you know, I think it's so beneficial to do either open the book and read the text for a short time every day, keeping in touch with this. See, this past week I was flying off in 9 different directions, and that's when I'm not in alignment. and I don't take the time to get into alignment. It's really a practice.
Yeah.
And the more I can make it a daily practice, the better off I am. But sometimes I just, you know, I just don't make the effort. And that's why it's so wonderful to connect tonight, because it makes me so much more aware that, oh, this is what I need to do.
That's why these calls are so powerful, because we come together and we strengthen these ideas in our mind together, and we're doing it together. You know, and where minds are joined, you know, it's really powerful. Yeah.
Absolutely. This was wonderful tonight, Deidre.
Thank you. I hope you all have a beautiful week. We have 3 minutes or so left, so if anybody has anything they want to share, please feel free.
Christy, I just want to say thank you both. This was a really great call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Christy, for sharing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Deidre.
Thank you.
You have a wonderful week, too.
Yeah, let's create lots of miracles this week and share them next week on the call.
Yes, I think that's a wonderful idea.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay,
beautiful.
Thank you again.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Bye. Good night.
Bye.